Turning young African eyes toward the cosmos, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Mike Simmons stopped by the other day. The founder and just-retired leader of Astronomers Without Borders brought along a very special guest. He'll introduce us to Olayinka Fagbemiro of the Nigerian Space Agency. Olayinka is also National Coordinator for Astronomers Without Borders Nigeria. Together, they'll tell us that the night sky unites all of humanity. Four new missions have made it to the next step in the long road toward selection by NASA. Emily Lakdawala will introduce them to us. And Bruce Betts brings back his favorite game, Where in the Solar System, with a tip of the Hobbit's hat to Middle Earth. It's almost here. The new expanded version of the Downlink will premiere on Friday, March 6th. You'll see it at planetary.org/downlink, which is also where you can be one of the first to sign up for the newsletter. Here's a sampling of the space headlines Jason Davis collected for the most recent edition. The largest unnamed world in our solar neighborhood now has an official moniker. It's Gonggong, named after a Chinese water god. Gonggong may be a bit larger than Pluto's companion, Charon. The body's discoverers asked the Planetary Society to help with a public selection process. Gonggong won by a 2-to-1 margin, and the name has been accepted by the International Astronomical Union. JPL engineers are making more aggressive attempts to get the InSight lander's probe, known as the Mole, to get a grip. The instrument is still stuck at the surface of Mars. Now the spacecraft's scoop will press on the Mole as it attempts to hammer itself deeper. Meanwhile, scientists have published results of the first 10 months of data from InSight's seismometer. It found 174 Mars quakes. More than 20 of these had magnitudes of greater than 3, which I can tell you, growing up in LA, is enough to shake you up. More to come, no doubt. The Juno mission has achieved one of its major goals by determining that water makes up about 0.25% of Jupiter's atmosphere. That's 3 times as much as Galileo's atmospheric probe found when it plunged into the giant world back in 1995. Scientists have long suspected that the probe was simply unlucky enough to enter an unusually dry spot. And NASA has acknowledged that the first liftoff of the Space Launch System, that giant rocket at the core of the agency's Artemis program, will be delayed to sometime in 2021. NASA still says it can return humans to the moon's surface by 2024. Emily Lakdawala is the Planetary Society's Solar System Specialist. Emily, great to get you back on to talk about these four brand new Discovery Program candidates. Could this be the year that Venus finally gets a little more love?
It could be. I mean, Venus has been visited by a couple of missions, but not by NASA for an awfully long time. In fact, it's so long ago, it was before I was even a graduate student. I was working on Magellan data for my grad program. And that's the last time NASA got any up close and personal data. So I'm so excited to see two Venus missions in this Discovery down selection. And I think the community is really, really hoping that that one of them will get picked.
I remind us, first of all, where are these Discovery missions in the entire spectrum of NASA's planetary science missions?
Well, Discovery is the lowest cost program of NASA missions. There's 3 basic classes of NASA missions. There's Discovery, New Frontiers, and Flagship. Discovery missions cost around $500 million. New Frontiers are about $1 billion, and then Flagship are like $2 billion and up. They're supposed to fly the most often. They're supposed to push the envelope in one way or another, either with the type of instrument that they're using, a type of measurement they're trying to perform, the way they operate, the kind of propulsion they use, you know, one of those things. It's designed to be rapidly developed missions that help NASA prove new technologies that they could later go on to use on some of their bigger missions. The Discovery program has really been quite successful over time. The hope is that they'll actually be able to pick 2 out of the 4. They'll pick at least 1, but people really are pulling for 2.
And they did pick 2 in the last round, right? Those 2 asteroid missions?
That's right. There's Lucy and Psyche. Lucy is a mission that's going to explore a bunch of centaurs and Trojans. These are rather distant small bodies. They orbit around Jupiter's distance from the sun. And so it'd be the first kind of mission to go to multiple objects like that. And then Psyche's a really fun one. It goes to an all-metal asteroid. So those will be very cool. And I think because both of those are asteroid missions, people were not surprised that the four missions down selected in this round, not one of them is proposed for an asteroid.
I can't wait for Psyche in particular, because it's going to be so interesting to finally see one of those metal monsters up close. But take us through these four candidates that are still competing in this round.
Well, we'll talk about the Venus missions first, since you mentioned those already. There's two. One's called Da Vinci Plus, and the other one's called Veritas. Both of them were actually in the final round, the last discovery selection that wound up with two asteroid missions, which is one of the reasons I think that people are really fairly sure that at least one of these will go forward. They're quite different missions. Da Vinci is one that will penetrate the atmosphere. It's studying the qualities of the atmosphere on the way down. It's basically an atmospheric probe. It will take cameras as it's descending, but it's not designed to last a long time. The Veritas mission is a radar mission, which is in a way like Magellan, but it's specifically focused on topography, which I can tell you as a person who studied Venus once, it is so necessary.
Now, what about the other two? They're going much further out.
Yeah, so the other two missions are pretty exciting. They're outer planets missions, and one of them has been proposed before, and that's Io Volcano Observer, which is exactly what it says on the tin. It's a spacecraft that's designed to orbit Jupiter and observe the volcanoes on Io.
Can we assume that it would also have a camera on board so that we could get really up close to those magnificent volcanoes?
It absolutely would. There's no question. As I've said before with Juno, it would be a crime to go to Jupiter and not have a camera on board.
All right. How about this last one, the fourth and the one that will be going the furthest if it's funded?
That's right. So Trident is a flyby of Triton, which is the largest moon of Neptune, the only actually big moon of Neptune, and likely a captured Kuiper Belt object. It's even larger than Pluto and is otherwise very Pluto-like in its composition and characteristics. It also orbits Neptune backwards, so it's probably a captured object. It probably didn't start out its existence there. We know that it has active geysers. It's just an opportunity to go by, map it, look for changes that have happened since Voyager 2 flew past, try to understand the particles and the environment around it. And, you know, Voyager 2, as cool as the flyby of the Neptune system was, it was a spacecraft that was really not designed to operate and get great pictures and things so far from the sun. So this would be the first really good flyby of Triton. Plus, they'd also obviously get some good close-up views of Neptune. They'd fly past some small bodies along the way, probably, and do some great science the way that New Horizons is doing science and small bodies in the outer solar system. And it has the distinction of being the only one in the list that doesn't have an acronym for its name.
I don't know if they get points for that or not. How soon after they are chosen might we actually see some of these head toward their destinations?
Well, it doesn't take all that. It shouldn't take all that long to develop a discovery mission. Usually it's just somewhere around 4 or 5 years to launch. And then, of course, how long it takes to get data depends upon how long a cruise they have. It's very quick to get to Venus. So we could be, as you know, maybe 5 months after launch. You'll be at Venus and already set up and starting to acquire preliminary data. But getting to other places like orbiting Jupiter and flying past Neptune take a long time. When you do planetary science, especially if you're an outer planetary scientist, you need to be really patient and be willing to accept the fact that you might be starting a project and launching it and then handing it over to a former graduate student to operate once it's in flight.
Emily, I'm glad to still be playing the long game with you here in planetary science. Lots to look forward to, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Matt.
That's our solar system specialist, Emily Lakdawalla of the Planetary Society. I'll be back in moments with Oleyinka Fagbemiro of Astronomers Without Borders Nigeria and AWB founder Mike Simmons.
Hi, I'm Yale astronomer Deborah Fisher. I've spent the last 20 years of my professional life searching for other worlds. Now I've taken on the 100 Earths Project. We want to discover 100 Earth-sized exoplanets circling nearby stars. It won't be easy. With your help, the Planetary Society will fund a key component of an exquisitely precise spectrometer. You can learn more and join the search at planetary.org/100Earths. Thanks.
Hey, Planetary Radio listeners, the Planetary Society now has an official online store. We've teamed up with Chop Shop, known for their space mission posters, to bring you space-inspired art and merchandise. You can find exclusive Planetary Society t-shirts, posters, and more. Visit planetly.com/spaceshop to learn more. That's planet.ly/spaceshop.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. Mike Simmons founded Astronomers Without Borders, or AWB, where the motto is One People, One Sky. There is hardly a portion of our planet that Mike has not visited, encouraging scientific wonder and curiosity wherever he goes. Olayinka Fagbemero is a kindred spirit. She is Assistant Chief Scientific Officer for Planning, Policy, and Research at the National Space Research and Development Agency in Nigeria. She has also had remarkable success as AWB's national coordinator in that nation. Mike called the other day to ask if he could bring Olayinka to the Planetary Society's Pasadena headquarters. We were thrilled to oblige. Here's just a taste of our conversation. There's much more at planetary.org/radio. Olayinka, welcome to the Planetary Society. I look like you enjoyed the tour.
Yes, thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here, and I'm particularly excited to be at this space. I love the tour that you have, an amazing space, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We like it very much, and I'm glad that you've had a good time as we showed you around. Yeah. You got a nice introduction to light sail from Bruce Betts, our chief scientist.
Yeah, it's really great because that's the first time hearing about this particular project, and I think it's amazing. I'll definitely go back home and share with my network and see what more we can learn and inspire little kids about that. I think it would be a great topic to discuss.
Absolutely. Well, we hope so anyway. I certainly agree with you. It was only 2 or 3 days ago that Mike let me know that you were in town, and he wondered if you'd be able to stop by. And of course, we love visitors. I was intrigued immediately because he talked about your role with Astronomers Without Borders in Nigeria. But he also said that you have a day job. You work with, is it the
Nigerian Space Agency?
Yes,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
When I left university in the year 2004, I started a job with the Nigerian Space Agency in the year 2007 as an outreach and education officer for space education. I've been there ever since. And along the line, I got involved in some other projects and Astronomers Without Borders, like universe awareness. And it's been awesome, like having a day job and then having the time to do this other very important work. I think it's a great thing for me because I get the chance to inspire little ones. We're trying to raise the next generation of space scientists and STEM guys in Africa. I also am the public and education officer for African Astronomical Society. What I do in Nigeria, I do by extension across Africa. African Astronomical Society is an organization with a very big reach to African countries. I think about 40 plus African countries are part of AFAS. One of the major things we're trying to do is first to create awareness about astronomy across Africa. Astronomy is not really so much developed in Africa as it is in the US and or Europe. So one of the major work we're trying to do is to create the awareness, get many young people involved in astronomy. We're trying to see a way of getting more people in the career part of astronomy and also to use astronomy as a means of teaching STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics across Africa. These are some of the many things that we do as AFAS.
My guess is that your day job with the Nigerian Space Agency probably keeps you pretty busy. Are they happy to have you involved with all these other activities like AWB?
Yes, they are. And
I think I've got the very good support in the Nigerian Space Agency, because Nigeria is a pretty big country with a population of almost 200 million people, and young people almost 30-40% of this population. So the Space Agency is happy to have as many extra hands as possible in reaching out to this large population of young people. And because my role in the Nigerian Space Agency is pretty much like an extension of what I do with AWB, Space Education Outreach. Mm-hmm. I personally head the Space Education Outreach of the agency. And also we have this new Space Museum. We have a lot of young kids coming around almost on daily basis, which I coordinate as well. So it's almost like there are no demarcations between what I do as Nigerian Space Agency and what I do as AWB.
How many children are among the displaced in Nigeria? Do you know roughly?
Maybe not the displaced, but the latest UNICEF statistics says there are 13.2 million out-of-school kids in Nigeria.
Out of school?
Yes. Okay. So that means these are children within the age of being in either elementary or high school who are not. So basically, they are on the streets. They are just not in school.
Not 13, good.
Yeah, 13.2 million of them. So when we went there with our telescopes, it was amazing. Like, looking through their eyes, even despite the situations they have, you know, it was really a moment for them to forget about the predicaments they are in as refugees in their home countries. They were very excited. And of course, they all were seeing the telescopes for the first time. So the excitement was so much, and it was really a good feeling for us as a team, because, you know, you have kids who usually sad because many of them are missing their parents who have either been killed or separated from them, you know, and then coming together, looking through the telescopes and then sharing their excitement with us, it was really wonderful. I think, like Mike said, kids all over the world, I think they are just the same, yep, irrespective of the level of comfort or background that they have. It's just amazing.
I am so glad that you were able to make it here as part of this trip across the United States, North America. And it really has been an honor to have you here in our studio and to tell us about this experience.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me here.
You're very welcome.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Mike, same to you. Always a pleasure. You must be, pride may be the wrong word because she achieved this on her own, but to be able to work with people like Ole Yinka around the world has to make you feel pretty good.
It's incomprehensible to me, really, that I got to a place where I have this kind of opportunity. Starting Astronomers Without Borders seemed like a good idea, but it's really always been the people in the community that made things really happen. Ole Yinka is an inspiration, really. I'm the lazy one. I get to just talk to people, and they go out and do all the work. I'm kind of like the Huck Finn of astronomy.
I think I've called you Johnny Astroseed or something like that in the past.
Well, you know, but it takes a village. It really does. And it just happens to be a place where that village doesn't have any borders. Sitting here looking right now at a portrait of Carl Sagan, one of the founders of the Planetary Society, who was one of the first people to really popularize the idea that we're all in this together. We're on this little pale blue dot, as he called it, from the Voyager picture. And when we look out into the sky and we see the same things and we have the same sense of wonder, the same sense of awe, and the same sense of belonging to something much bigger, and we can bring that feeling to Earth and realize that we're all crew members on Spaceship Earth, as Buckminster Fuller called it, and that we really have so much more in common than all these little details that separate us.
One people, one sky, right?
Exactly.
Oleinka, have you had any impression that he has ever been lazy in his life?
No way. Like Mike, it's a great support for it. You know, when Mike tells the story, I'm like, okay, maybe. But I remember meeting Mike in 2013 and he said, okay, you could do that. I said, okay, fine. And then I go back to Nigeria and then I started AWB Nigeria. But every step of the way, Mike was there, you know, supporting 110%, you know, like guiding us on what we needed to do at the time, and encouraging every step I took. And I think that really made me want to do more, because each time we had a program, then we did something, Mike would be like, wow, this is amazing. I would be like, okay. It's really amazing to have, you know, Mike all through the way, you know, helping all along and being the inspiration that really got us going. I think it's great.
I hope that you will continue to inspire each other and many other people, not just in Nigeria, but around the world. We need more of you. Thank you both very much. And enjoy. Have a good, safe trip home and a wonderful time when you return to Nigeria, Oleinka.
Thank you very much.
And Mike, we'll talk again.
Oh, I hope so.
Astronomers Without Borders founder Mike Simmons and AWB National Coordinator for Nigeria, Oleinka Fagbemero. We talked to Planetary Society headquarters in mid-February. Time once again for What's Up on Planetary Radio. Here is the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. That's Bruce Betts, who has his hand in a lot of things going on at the Society, including a brand new campaign to support the search for not just one, not just two, not three Earths, but 100 Earths. Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, we're working with Deborah Fisher, exoplanet hunter extraordinaire, and her team, including she's at Yale and Joe Lama at, well, you talked to them last week at Lowell Observatory. And we are doing a campaign to help support the replacement of a super high-tech fiber optic component, basically a photonic crystal fiber.
What's up in the night sky? How many Earths have you found?
One. You can look down at any given time and you will find one Earth and only 99 to go.
Still in the habitable zone, too, at least for the time being.
It is. We got a bunch of other planets, as I'm kind of repetitive, but, you know, that's the way the sky works. In the evening sky, Venus just looking stunning over there in the west in the early evening, super bright star-like object. And in the morning sky, we got a lineup of planets with that are going to be shifting positions in the coming weeks. Right now, we've got Mars looking reddish in the highest right position. This is over to the east in the pre-dawn. And then bright Jupiter to its lower left and yellowish Saturn to its lower left. And then on March 18th, we'll have the crescent moon hanging out and it'll be glorious. And then the planets will all dance over the next coming weeks. So check that out if you're a pre-dawn kind of person. Look over in the east.
You know, I just remember tomorrow I have to get up before dawn to interview Andrewian, who, with if all goes well, will be my guest, talking about the new season of Cosmos that premieres on the 9th, March 9th. So maybe I'll duck outside first. Hopefully I won't lock myself out prior to having to interview her on the phone.
You should just put a key in your pajamas just in case.
I don't think they have pockets.
Duct tape it to your forehead.
Good idea. That never fails.
And on that brilliant note, let's move on to this week in space history. It was 2006 that Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter went into orbit around Mars, and it's still working with its amazing high-resolution camera and other science instruments. 2015, Ceres Dawn went into orbit around Ceres in 2015.
That's great. And only after it had orbited Vesta and then departed, becoming the first spacecraft to orbit two objects in our solar system.
Random math fact.
I can't help it. I'm so thrilled by that mission.
No, it's amazing.
We'll also, I'm sure, warm the heart of our regular listener, Mark Raymond, who was had two jobs leading that mission.
One for Vesta, one for Ceres. No, not really.
No.
All right, we move on to Random Space Fact.
Oh my goodness, you really need a nap.
I do. At its average distance, you could fit more than 6,000 Earths side by side between Earth and Mars.
Is that all?
Yeah. It's Mars, so it varies considerably, but that's an average distance. But yeah, only a few more than 6,000 Earths side by side. Now, we're hoping that Deborah and Joe find 100 of those that we can stick side by side, but we're going to have a more advanced campaign in the future to find the other 5,900. All right, we already got one. All right, on to the trivia contest. We asked you, what ranger mission imaged Mare Tranquillidades, the Sea of Tranquility, before slamming into the surface as intended? Ranger 8, the second successful ranger that returned images of Mare Tranquillidades.
Fernando Nagal in Lisbon, Portugal. Another one from across the pond. He said, sure, it was Ranger 8. He added, listening to the Planetary Radio podcast is always time well spent, informative, and entertaining. Thank you, and keep it up. Ad Astra.
No, that's nice.
Fernando has won a copy of that great book by Paul Davies that we talked about just 2 weeks ago, The Demon in the Machine, How Hidden Webs of Information Are Solving the Mystery of Life. And we will throw in a Planetary Society rubber asteroid. We're ready for another one of these.
All right. It's time again. I can't wait any longer. It's time for Where in the Solar System?
Wait a minute.
That's brilliant. Where in the, you're so pleased with yourself. I love it.
Just love where, the sound effects.
Where in the solar system is there a feature named Bilbo? Bilbo, B-I-L-B-O, as in Bilbo Baggins, but just Bilbo. Where in the solar system is there a feature named Bilbo? I'm just having fun saying Bilbo. I'm sorry. Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
Is there also one named Frodo and Sam?
No, I don't know why. I didn't actually search for Sam. There may be a Sam. It's probably not a Samwise. I'll look.
Extra points if you tell us where Samwise and Frodo currently reside somewhere around the solar system. You have until the 11th, that'd be March 11th, at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us the answer this time. And we'll send you a Planetary Society rubber asteroid and a Planetary Radio t-shirt from ChopShopStore.com. That's where the Planetary Society store is, and you can check out all our cool stuff. We're done.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up in the night sky, and think about if you were to go there and back again, where would you like to go there and back again? Thank you, and good night.
Second star on the right, straight on toward morning. He's Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, who joins us here in Neverland every week for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its wide-eyed members throughout the world. Mark Hilverdez, our associate producer, Josh Doyle, composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Ad Astra.